We are launching into chapter three. Chapter three of the Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign. This is going to be exciting. We have so many goodies for you as we continue the conversation here on Continuing Conversations. I'm Michael Dismeek, freelance writer for Star Trek Adventures, lead writer on Captain's Log, and of course, a blogger on Continuing Missions. And this would not be a show without Jim Johnson.
Hey everybody, Jim Johnson. I am the project manager and line editor for the Star Trek Adventures RPG and the Captain's Log solo RPG, both published by Medivius Entertainment. Going on 8 years now of this. This is super fun. And 120 plus episodes of this podcast with Michael. Super fun to be doing this. I would have never known we made it this far, and we've got still so much more to do. So really happy to be here to talk about this great book and this chapter in particular. And we've got the lead writer of the Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign with us, Al Spader.
How's it going? I'm Al Spader. I'm a freelance writer for Modifius. I'm a game designer, system designer. I was lead writer on this project, and we're going to dig into what's going to set this campaign apart from any other campaign that you've played in the past.
Mm-hmm. So just to set the stage, Ivan Sorensen and Al worked together on developing this this campaign overlay structure, and I'm just thrilled to have Al here to talk about it. So why don't you start walking us through it, Al, and we'll pepper you with questions, but mostly just want to hear your perspective about how it all came together.
Yeah, and absolutely. Who's Ivan too? I want to know. I've never met Ivan.
So Ivan Sorensen is known for his procedurally generated miniatures games, Five Leagues from the Borderlands and Five Parsecs from Home, both of which were picked up and published by Modifius. In fact, I think he even has an expansion coming out for Five Parsecs from Home soon that they've announced. So his whole thing was solo miniature war games, which was, and when we first heard about Captain's Log, that's kind of the thing that I was thinking of in the back of my head. But he did procedurally generated like characters and procedurally generated enemies and whatnot as part of Five Parsecs from Home and Five Leagues. So he was all about using tables to create encounters. And when Jim was tossing out the ideas of a couple of different books that were going to be different, one being Captain's Log and the other one being this tactical campaign, he kind of sent us this document that Ivan and Nathan had put together that was like a basic overview of what a tactical campaign might look like. So think of this as like an overlay on top of your role playing. This is almost like a board game type part of the campaign experience, and it is all procedurally generated. So that was, and of course, because I love mechanics and I love like getting into the minutiae of things, I like dove right for that when Jim said he was looking for lead writers. So yeah.
And as we get into this, I love that. I played Five Parsecs with Home. Someone ran a game I actually got to play in, a friend of mine, and I love that game. As we get into this chapter two, I want people to understand how I wish I could play this game and my wife would let me take over the dining room table to do it. So picture World War II, the big, remember, tactical maps that all the generals would be standing at the table with those long, sticks, which I always were more like pool cues to me, and pushing tanks and moving, picking up flags and dropping them. That to me would be the ultimate way to play this tactical campaign. So in my mind, I'm seeing that. And believe me, by the time I actually get to it, I'll probably just put together a PowerPoint or Excel and do it electronically because we play on Discord. But I want people to picture that as we go into this chapter, right, Al?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think of this as like it's storytelling, but it's storytelling on a different scale, right? So you have your characters on board their ship that are telling one type of story, and now you have your admirals that are telling another story by assigning assets and dealing with things that are going on around. Jim, did you have something you wanted to add?
Well, I did. I had a non sequitur, so I think I'll just skip that. But I will say I love the idea of having an Admiralty level campaign, because it's taken the concepts that Nathan put into the Command Source book and then just like really going to the next level with it, actually putting some real meat around it and like giving players and some agency and some actual things to do with it, right? To move stuff around the board. You know, and I'll be honest, my non sequitur is I love what Michael was saying about the big board with the push things, right? I'm a frustrated war gamer. I have a whole bunch of box games on my shelf that are like Rev War and a Civil War, of like with the big maps that fold out and all the little cardboard chits that you can put on it and you can move stuff around. But I just don't like my house. I don't have space. I don't have a table big enough to put it on anywhere. And so it's like this, so they just sit on the shelf and I'm like, oh, I want to play it someday, but I don't have anywhere to put it.
I feel your pain.
You don't have to worry about that with this game, because it's mostly theater of the mind, but you can visualize it. And I'm sure I will talk more about that as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. So this campaign overlay, as we refer to it throughout the book, it is optional. Like, you don't have to play it if you just want to tell your stories using the missions and the mission briefs. Or you could just play this tactical overlay if you didn't want to role play. Like, it is, the option is there for you. The other cool thing about it is the GM, while the game master does have to kind of like manage a few of the things, we do have sheets for everyone to keep track of assets and points of interest and things like that. It really, the GM can align with the players as part of this Admiralty experience on the tactical overlay. You know, if you're playing solo, you could also easily just use the tactical overlay as a solo game to supplement Captain's Log or something like that.
I want to say that's how I played it. So initially, you know, we play tested it with some of us, you know, talking about the rules and kind of going through the mechanics. But then I was interested in if I could actually adapt this for a solo campaign. And I spent a large portion of a vacation playing it, where my wife was like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm playing this tactical game." And I was totally up late playing it because there was so much going on. I actually had to draw it out, and I took very extensive notes of every single turn as a solo campaign. And I was like, oh, this is just fantastic, because now for Captain's Log, of course, I have my captain that I consistently run, but I had this war going on at the same time. And then they're getting assigned out to their Captain's Log mission for that, since I didn't have a group to play any of these modules. So solo, totally adapted. And you'll see more of that on Continuing Mission. I'll post about how I adapted it and include my notes.
So the tactical overlay is divided into three phases: early war, mid war, and late war. And each phase has, or stage, I should say, has three turns that are involved inside of it. So a turn is basically generating assets, assigning them to points of interest to deal with them, rolling dice, and then seeing what happens after the encounter. So that's the gist of each turn. So all told, there are 9 turns over the course of the entire campaign overlay that you will play through while generating assets and points of interest. So the game starts by your initial generation of assets, and assets can be ships, they can be characters, or USS Enterprise, that's not on there, but like that could be an asset that you have to assign to a different location, and so on and so forth. Assets, once they're assigned to a point of interest, can be reused in the next turn as long as they're not lost. There's a lot that happens here as you start playing through. Mike, you wanted to add something?
Well, yeah, I think I want to be very clear that when I first read it, I was like, okay. When I played it, my sense of anxiety went up every single round. I was afraid when we were playtesting that how can it be balanced? Like, how do you know you're going to get enough assets to make it fun, but you're going to have enough problems generated to stress you out and feel like it's a real campaign? Very well balanced. I only can give a review on it because I didn't design this system. But I think I was texting you, in fact, from vacation. And I was telling you, I'm like, this is actually getting stressed. And the more I was playing through the rounds, one, two, three, especially in phase two, because you up the ante, I won't go into the rules of how that works, but just like in real war, the deeper you get into it, the more you up the ante. And you're desperate to learn how to maneuver your pieces around. Again, going back to the strategy games Jim is talking about, like if you're playing Risk or whether you're playing Civilization, it really is about learning how to best use your assets. And it took me all the way into seven rounds to start figuring stuff out. So I got my butt whipped early on. And then later on, the feeling of victory as I was doing better was cool. So really well-designed game in that aspect.
Awesome. Yeah. Each asset has five different powers assigned to it. Medical power, military power, personal power, science power, and social power. And these are the numbers that determine what you need to roll when you assign them to a point of interest. So point of interest, when they're generated, they have a difficulty assigned to them. So let's say it's a difficulty two test to try to deal with it. And you assign a ship and a character asset to deal with it. You choose either the ship or the character to be the lead on the roll, and then the other asset supports the roll. So it's just like when you're playing Star Trek Adventures, you have a lead and an assist. The one catch here is that your character and ship assets have what are called primary powers. So that's what they were designed to do. Primary powers, if you are using them when assigned at a tactical or at a point of interest, you can reroll one of your D20s, just because that is what the ship was meant to do. We know that in the Klingon Federation War, there are a lot of ships that are participating in this war, and that's not what the ships are designed to do at all. So we want to reward clever admirals for assigning their assets appropriately. And that's the way you can do it, is with those primary powers.
Can I ask a question too that came up while I was playing and I never had a chance to ask you before? So if I'm writing this narratively and I lose a ship or I lose an asset, later on I might go back and re-roll that ship I lost or that asset. Should I rename it? Do I make up a story about how it came back? Like what would be your narrative?
So that's a good question. So there's a couple of things to think about there. So if your ship was destroyed with all hands on board and you re-roll it while you're generating assets, you could keep the class, right, and just call it something else. But one of the things that I would do as the game master is I would say, especially if it's a character that you lost, because in here, it doesn't say that your characters are killed. It says they're lost. So you can take any of the mission briefs or missions that are part of the campaign itself and have that character show up in a prison cell, wounded somewhere, things like that, so you can bring them back and regain the asset.
Oh, that's brilliant. I didn't even think about that. So it doesn't say died, it says lost. Okay, yep. There you go. Thank you.
Yep.
Nobody really dies in Star Trek.
That's true.
Just need a clever writer.
So, I think I forgot to mention the third type of asset, which is resources. Resources can only be assigned once, and they must either be assigned with a character or a ship. So this could be extra medical supplies. This could be, an old retired captain that's coming out for one last battle, things like that. But they only give their bonus once. So resources are different than ships and characters. Ships and characters you reuse throughout every turn of the campaign so long as they survive. So when you get to your points of interest, you start looking at, is this tactical? Is this exploration? Is this routine? Or is this unknown, right? So you will know the tactical point of interest, the exploration point of interest, and the routine point of interest. You will know the difficulty of those as you're assigning your assets to them. The unknown points of interest, you will not know what's happening there. So you kind of like have to do like your most well-rounded stuff to go explore that, because you don't know what's going on there. It might just be like a distress signal that showed up and then disappeared, and now you can't find anyone, things like that. So that's a really cool part of this as well, is trying to figure out which asset would be best well-rounded to see, to go to an unknown situation.
Well, I want to add to the, again, going into my feelings while I was playing the game, whenever I was rolling and I was really getting beat up and I rolled that I had to do another tactical, I literally would hang my head and be like, we don't have the energy for this. And it reminded me of those World War II movies where you had the admirals like, well, we're gonna lose this platoon going, or you're gonna have to make some sacrifices because we have to answer this right now. And it's gonna for a short rule that you haven't said yet is, if you skip up on it, if you skip a tactical POI point of interest, it's worse the next round. It's harder. It's more difficult to succeed. So I was sitting there literally sweating, like, I'm gonna have to sacrifice. There came a point where I had to sacrifice some tactical things to get ahead in the war. And I was like, wow, this really is emulating that World War II feel. I was thinking D-Day the whole time, Utah Beach.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is referring to urgency on the tactical points of interest, right? So if you don't deal with, or if you fail at a tactical point of interest, the urgency goes up on the next turn, which can make some more points of interest show up. It can increase difficulties. It is things can very much snowball out of control if you don't deal with them right away. So that's what happens if you don't address one of those. Exploration points of interest, they stick around for two rounds. So if you don't deal with them the first round, you can deal with them the second turn. And if you don't, they just go away. But the thing is with exploration, when you do succeed on the exploration, you get bonuses at the end of each turn, which is kind of cool. And then the routine, which is really annoying. If you skip out on a routine point of interest, next turn, you lose either a character or ship asset that has to go deal with that routine. So they'll be unavailable for a turn if you don't deal with it. So that's also very flavorful as well, right? Like, hey, nobody was here to transport this admiral from one place to another. Now this ship has to go do it, and you can't use it in other situations.
Yeah, it's the... Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say the routine stuff. It's the BAU, business as usual. Like I think we talked about this in another episode where, you know, even though there's this war going on, the underpinnings that keep the Federation together still have to happen, right? You still got to do the basic stuff just to keep things running, keep the lights on basically. And so, you know, if you choose not to do it, someone else has got to do it, and you might lose a resource that has to go do that thing that you chose not to do. So I love it.
Yeah, I kind of pictured, just so people know, because it's not mentioned in here, but when I was going through this, first of all, I want to say there was one round where I remember I only got like one tactical and everything was routine exploration. I was like crying tears of joy because I was like, yes, I can recoup for one round. But what I was also thinking when I was playing this game, if I was playing with a bunch of people around the table, I would actually take the ships, like the 20 ships and the 20 people assets, and I would actually divide them among the players, so they're kind of like your personal fleets. And what would be cool about that, why I did that, is because then I'd be arguing, if I'm one of the admirals, why are we always assigning my ship to the tactical step? I'm losing my resources. I've lost a vessel. And these are real discussions that happen in military circles. So that wasn't outlined here, Alan. I'm going to probably do a continuing mission article about it, but I would make it that you assign ahead of time admirals to each one of those assets, even resources. So it's like, wait, remember, I'm the one who gave you military. You owe me a favor this time. I gave you medical supplies. Yeah. Like I could see that being another enhancement on the game.
Yeah, I think that would be spectacular. That'd be a good way to do it. And then, of course, when you go to these unknown points of interest, you assign your assets and then you roll to see what the unknown thing is. And it could be something that you're trained for. It could be something that your ship is not ready for at all, which I love as well.
I love that because it's so Star Trek, right? You send out a ship. Oh, they're gone. What happened? I don't know. They're gone. they got sucked into a wormhole. They got something happened, and maybe they'll come back. You don't know.
In one round, I actually pictured Leonard McCoy cursing me out because he was the lead on a military exercise.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, this would have been hilarious, him cursing me out as an admiral.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So I love these.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, Al, because like I mentioned in another episode that you've steadily been wearing me down on how awesome random tables are. And like I was looking at these and I was like, oh, I can totally use these in Captain's Log. Just as another option, as another set of optional D20 tables to drop in. It's like, oh, if I'm hurting for another plot hook or another story B plot or something, I can just roll on one of these tables. Like, oh, yep, there we go. Off and running.
Yeah. That's why we call this procedurally generated, right? Because we're rolling to see what each step is. One thing that happens after you've assigned all your assets to the points of interest is there's an event. An event happens at a random point of interest. And that's another D20 table that happens, which this leads to unexpected things or sometimes you think you're going to do one thing at a point of interest, but then something else happens. So an old enemy has laid a trap, you know? So after you've assigned your assets, you roll that event, and that can actually change what's happening at your point of interest. Like, it might make it more challenging. It might make it more deadly. It might make it. So those events are really, really fun when they pop up as well.
Yeah. And again, some people just maybe want to just play this tactically and not really assign a lot of narration to it. But I did. And I ended up with a Klingon admiral who was kicking our butt all over the system. And that I kept having that character become the arch enemy, kind of growing and growing each time. So you could do a lot of narration with this. And then I pictured if we did go play a mission, that would be one of the main protagonists, antagonists in a mission. So again, you can go fast through these really quick. You can roll through everything and come out with your outcome, but feel free to slow it down. If I was with a group of players, I'm like, well, what happened there? Who's our enemy? What did that battle look like? I could see using these tables to do that.
And the other thing to remember when it's time to start rolling dice is that because this is a different scale than the actual campaign role-playing stories that you're telling, first of all, one of your points of interest you can make be a role-playing experience, right? So if you have a point of interest that maybe you don't have the appropriate asset for, you can say, that's the one we're going to role play together as a crew and use one of the, the mission briefs that are in there to do that. So if it was a tactical point of interest and you don't have, the right tool for the job, all right, well, let's go in and role play this and see what happens. So I think that's really important as well.
I just want to say, Jim, we had Eric Campbell on several weeks ago talking about the Discord server that he set up called the League of Whimsy. And I could see this being the overlay for his admiral piece of it, with all these people with their captain logs, like running this high level as to what's going on with their starbase. So I was just, I'll send that over to Eric Campbell to think about after he sees this release. But I didn't want to mention it then because this hadn't been released yet. And I was just like, dude, this is going to be the template you use to run League of Whimsy. I really felt that.
So we did say that you are rolling dice, you're making checks just like you would in Star Trek Adventures. However, because the tactical overlay is this higher scale thing, it has its own momentum pool that you keep track of, that you can add dice to. And if you get additional successes, add momentum to and whatnot. So don't forget about that. And that campaign momentum is actually really, really important later on, because you can use it to get more assets, which is kind of cool. So after you've gone through a turn, you've rolled all your dice, you've seen what were you successful at, what were you not successful at, that's when you go through the process of saying, all right, so what happened to my assets? Did I lose them? Is everything okay? That type of stuff. And that kind of wraps up your turn. And then you can generate two new assets, essentially. There's a lot going on here, and I'll say my first couple of times playing through, it took me two full turns before I really had a good grasp on how the system worked.
I encourage people to take good notes. You provide, some template notes in the back of the book, but I prefer to take a little bit more extensive notes because there is a lot going on. So don't rely on your memory on this, really say at this round, this, and then I took every single point of interest, and I kind of then wrote notes next to it, what would happen at the end of each turn based on it. And that after two to three rounds, I got the flow, and I knew it gets really fast toward once you get used to it.
And at the end of each turn, you get what are called progression points, which are kind of like experience points. But these are ways that you can enhance one of your assets in some way. So it could be like a ship refit. You could have gained an ally. And what happens is these give additional options when you are signing your assets in the next turn. Some of these stay on your asset and just make like their power better, while others, you know, are usable once and then go away. But the progression table is a lot of fun to like build that narrative with. So this ship at this tactical place did that, and because of that, they got this upgrade. You know what I mean? Something like that.
That's awesome, Al. And can you talk a little bit, just briefly, say I'm a game master and a group of players, and we're doing the tactical campaign, and then we're jumping into some of the mission briefs and some of the full length adventures that are in the campaign too. Are there, to talk about a little bit how the successes or failures of the players in the tactical piece of it, how does that influence the scenarios that they then go on to role play through?
So there are certain points of interest that if they aren't dealt with appropriately, they have little extra things that happen. And one of them might be like the game master starts with one additional threat in their next role play experience, you know, like things like that. And then when you finish the role playing missions, every single one has a success or a failure. And those can either like give you assets, give you campaign momentum, or you can like lose assets if you failed in the mission and things like that. So that criteria is there at the end of every single mission and every single mission brief to have a impact in the overall story.
Designed so well, Al. I'll give you my, designed so well. I didn't see it until I played it, and then I went back and read missions. I was like, wait a second, this actually has an effect on, this can be incorporated to start. We'll talk a little bit toward the end about some ideas about how to adapt this to your current game, even if you're not fighting Klingon War. We'll talk about that, but really well designed.
One thing that I do want to just point out is when you look at the points of interest in the escalations and all those tables, it's very generic what you can roll on them, which means that it doesn't necessarily just apply to the Klingon War, right? This could very easily use the exact same table for a Dominion War or a Romulan War. Our goal, the assets are very specifically aligned with the Klingon Federation War. And you would have to tweak that if you wanted to do like a Dominion War. But the base of this campaign overlay is really adaptable to whatever era you want to put it in, which is awesome.
Okay, so you talked about it. So let's talk about that for a second. So suppose I'm playing the Dominion War, right? I'm going to just say that because that's probably the most famous war we have in Star Trek, right? So you're saying that I would go to like page 78, ship name and class, and what should I do with that then? Because those are all, you know, those are all Strange New Worlds Discovery era ships. These are outdated by the time of the Dominion War. So what would you do with this table then?
So what I would do is I would tweak those to be more modern 24th century ships, right? And if you look right up above the table, it actually tells how to figure out the power for each of the ships. So let's say we went to Utopia Planitia, and we looked up our Nebula class ship, and we wanted to have a Nebula class ship on our table here. We would just look at the stats that it was given in Utopia Planitia, and then say, all right, well, their medical power would be equal to their computers plus their medicine.
Okay.
And so on and so forth. Each type of asset characters too. I went into how do you build those assets specifically. It takes some time to table of 20, but you could have a lot of fun bringing in like old ships that you played in other campaigns. Like you could have a lot of fun with that.
Well, I'm thinking like our game. So everyone knows we play in a different galaxy, but we've definitely met some characters and we have people on our ship who are NPCs who are pretty powerful in certain areas. So we could take maybe our top 20 popular characters and drop them in here for that campaign, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be one way to do it. And again, because their stats already exist, you have how to build the asset as far as the campaign overlay on each of these pages.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm flipping through it again here, just refreshing my memory. And I think literally you could take the character asset table and the ship asset table. I mean, it'll take a little bit of legwork to go and figure out the stats, right? And change up the names and stuff, but you could drop those two tables on continuing mission and you're good to go. I think everything else in this chapter can pretty much be lifted whole cloth and dropped right into the Dominion War or into the Romulan War or any whatever war you want to come up with. Because you and Ivan and everybody just did such a great job of carefully wording this so that it wasn't entirely specific to the, I mean, obviously the assets, like you said, are super oriented to it, but I mean, you could do all kinds of stuff.
But the resource assets are fairly generic. So you could probably keep the resource asset, table as it is.
Or you could add stuff that's particular to your game. So people who are playing the Shackleton Expanse might say, you know what, let me add some Shackleton space folding technology or this tractor beam technology as an asset. Like you could really tailor this. And then Jim, to your point, which I thought you were about to say, when it comes to the people assets, the character assets, I could scrape the Gamma Quadrant book or the command module and look for characters that are already written up in the back of these quadrant books to say, okay, though I'm going to drop those in as assets for this war campaign.
And the character packs.
Yeah,
right. The digital character packs. You could, you know, very clearly bring those out and start using some of those characters. You know.
Yeah, or you can and to build onto that, you could take the tables as they're written, and you got Commodore April in here. You've got a bunch of admirals. You could very easily just say, oh, you know what? Admiral Terrell, scratch out Terrell, put in Abair from the Shackleton Expanse. You're done. Same stats, same basic idea. You don't have to go through all the extra legwork, even though they're statted up, right? But, Michael, you mentioned the Shackleton Expanse campaign. I'm like, why not have some assets for the Narendra Station and the Vinshari and some of those other species that we got in there, the Calmurans, and start bringing them in and like have a whole the Dominion War is over. We're going back to exploration, but the stuff's heating up in the Shackleton Expanse. And all of a sudden we've got another war and
we get all this stuff
coming.
Well, another piece that Al, that you were talking about, that's phenomenal, is I could take all the Shackleton Expanse modules and briefs. And as a game master say, okay, at the end, if they succeed, how will this affect the tactical campaign? If they fail, what's the penalty? So I could go and take a post-it note on each one of those at the end and say, okay, I'm going to just go through here and write through here so that when we want to do our module, we could pick any of the mini modules from the living campaign and add it in here. It's just, and you could do this with every single module and mission brief, really, that SA's ever made. Said, okay, this is going to play into my larger story, and these are the benefits of it. It's just mind blowing. When I played this, my mind just went off.
Yeah, I'm going to riff a little bit more. because now with the Klingon core rulebook, you could take these overlays and completely make them Klingon, like bring in core Koloth, Kempek, all of those characters from the Klingon core rulebook, and make all the ship assets Klingon ships, make all the character assets Klingon assets. Boom, you got a full blown Klingon tactical campaign, whether it's Dominion or Federation Klingon War or not, right? And then I know in the Discovery book, the campaign guide, and then in this book we allude to the Independence campaigns, right? I think you could put a little bit of brain power into this and make this a independent campaign where you could have like mercenaries and pirates and Nausicaans and Orions and like have non-Federation, non-Klingon vessels doing this and have a whole tactical campaign of like everybody else, right? So like you got the Federation doing stuff, you got the Klingons doing stuff, but you know, here's the Orions, here's the what was it called in the 32nd century, the Emerald
Emerald Chain.
The Emerald Chain. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You can make it Romulan. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. You just get creative oh man.
I felt you could even, so I'm one more riff and I'm done. Even if you wanted to play the Orions, like the Ferengi, and you're not, the war could be a financial war too. You could just mess with these tables enough to make it a financial or even a purely diplomatic confrontation if you play it right, where it's about winning over a planet to the Federation as opposed to the Klingons. You could just take it to focus on like an outpost or a star base and just change it all from war to the art of war, you know, diplomatic warfare.
Yeah, and if you go back to our Game Master chapter, which we talked about last week, we do give some suggestions as to how to make that profiteering game work by making just a few couple of tweaks to this overlay, which is cool as well. One thing I do want to throw out there is that some of the ships and some of the
characters Jim is still riffing. Jim is. I'm pointing at Jim. He's still riffing. I could tell. Jim, it's why we're here.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to point out that I tried to adapt some talents to the overlay. So you'll see like rugged design, advanced sensors. So when you are building your assets, you can use that as like a generic ability that you can add onto a ship if it has advanced sensors, you know, or improved hull or whatever, which is cool.
Jim, you have to say, I'm not going to be happy unless you tell us what you're riffing about.
Well, I mean, it'll be no surprise. I can reenact the season one of Lower Decks and do a pack-led tactical campaign.
Oh God.
where they're going after the whole Alpha and Beta quadrant and just laying waste to everybody with their clump ships.
There are so many scary assets and escalations available from Lower uh-huh. Decks that is actually a terror and events that's actually almost terrifying.
Yeah. So one of the things that you alluded to way back at the beginning, Michael, to bring us kind of full circle, was that each stage of the campaign changes slightly, right? Because as war progresses, war changes, right? And we know that in the Klingon Federation war here, that things got really, really, really bad for the Federation. We don't get to see a lot of that badness happening, but we know that when Discovery returns from the Mirror Universe, that it is very bad. So as you progress through the game and you move on to your different stages, like when you go from early war to mid war, we change things up a little bit. So now you're not just getting 5 points of interest every turn. Now you're generating 6 points of interest every turn. And additionally, 19s and 20s are bad for you. When you are making trying to overcome these different points of interest problems. And then when you move on to the late war, the pace does go back down to 5. So you're only generating 5 points of interest each turn. However, now the serious setbacks and the losses happen on 18s to 20. So that's pretty interesting as well, to really put the hurting on your assets.
Yeah. So can we talk about that narratively? Because I did get caught up in playing it. Al, so I'm kind of curious your advice on this. You know, I went 7 rounds in and I was thinking, like most many soldiers and civilians do, this is never going to end. I could not see a way out. So tell me narratively, as a game master with players, how do I make it so this still ends up a Star Trek happy ending?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's really, you're supporting your role play aspect. Right. Knowing that these characters are doing good and protecting people and whatnot. And then you have, you know, the big finale at the end where you aren't the one that stops the war, but you have a pretty pivotal moment and defining moment in the war. So I think that's part of what we would say. There could also be rounds, like you said, where you get to like breathe in the tactical overlay. And I think really embellishing those rounds, I think, is a good thing as well.
I want to add in real life, sad to say, wars don't just peter off. There's usually some major event. You know, I think about Hiroshima, I think about D-Day, you know, there's some major event that slams it and brings it to the end, and there's still damage after that has to be. So I just want to encourage, as I was thinking about this, you know, designing this for our game and upscaling us to a war, I was like, okay, there's going to need to have to be an out. There's going to have to be a place where things are really bad, but the characters who are my heroes, you know, in this case, our ship, are going to be key to that abrupt end. And so just know that game masters have an end point in mind, because otherwise war just keeps going on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of, I think, the brilliant part about this story is that we know that there's an ending. We know that it's a positive ending. And we're just kind of exploring the characters that are experiencing it. You know what I mean? And I think that the role play aspect in our missions is very much embraces that.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the cool things that you all alluded to in this book is that it's the continuing story. Like, what happens after Discovery returns? What happens after they plant that bomb on Kronos and brings the war to an end? But depending on how your campaign is going, that might not be the end of your campaign, right? That might be like the midpoint of your campaign or the beginning. Or the end of the beginning of your campaign. Like, okay, so what happens next? All those things that your group has been doing during the war, there are still consequences from those things, right? Maybe they're still trying to broker peace, or they're trying to help a civilization through the war and then recover from the war. And then you think about, like, there's no shortage of characters like Reno, right? Who got stuck somewhere, got stuck on an asteroid, got stuck on a planet, got stuck on a moon, and don't know that the war's over, right? And they're still doing their thing. They're keeping people alive, or they're trying to negotiate something, or maybe there's some sort of scientific thing that they're trying to work out, or maybe there's some secret project that was happening to support the war effort, and they didn't get the message that the war's over. And now they got this big, horrible thing, and the Federation's like, oh, wait, we don't need that anymore. Oh, hello!
Sorry, we have a guest star. We have a guest star for those on the podcast. We have a guest star.
That's so cool. I think that's the first time, Al. I think that's the first time we've had a guest from your side of things.
Yeah, Desmond has woken up and is excited to see what's going on down here.
Our XO, hey, our first officer, is up. Welcome to the show. First time.
Nice to meet you, buddy.
Going on to what you were saying, Jim, too, I was thinking about what Laurel said in Discovery, which is actually quoted at the beginning of this chapter. She said, "Klingons have tasted your blood. Conquer us or we will never relent." Mm-hmm. So basically the writer had put in there, if this is going to end, we're going to need a dramatic action to end this war. Right. So advice again to game masters, know what will end the war. In our Telecall saga, when we played the Shackled Expanse, I knew exactly what would beat it. And I left it there. And so, you know, this is going to be fun. I'm going to have so much fun exploring over the next years, how people use this campaign with their games. I know, Jim, and for those of you watching and listening to our show, we are going to have a show about how to meld Captain's Log with STA with the Federation, with the tactical campaign. We're going to talk about how we narratively do that and just riff off of that, just so you all can see how all of these by design work together.
Yeah. And I think with that, I think this has been a great show. And I think, Al, I think out of deference to you, we'll speed on over to gratitude, and then we'll wrap it up for tonight so we can get Desmond some well-earned rest there. So, Michael, what's your final words and then gratitude?
Yeah. So those were my final words. What I just said is looking forward to that show. After we let this get out there into the universe a little bit and see what people do with it, we're going to come back together, this group, as project manager for Star Trek Adventures, lead writer for Captain's Log and the tactical campaign, we're going to come together and really riff on how big this universe has got, this Star Trek universe. So my thank you goes to none other than you, Al, for lead writing on this baby. This was my most excited chapter to talk about. I know we're next week, we're going to be talking about the stories and the campaign that we designed, but this blew my mind. We see it on paper and sometimes we get nervous about it, but this one, it's changed. Believe me, you are going to regret having written this book when we play our game over the next 2 years.
Well, it is a lot went into this, and there's a lot of minutia, but it's laid out in such a way that it's like, one page, and if you just follow it step by step by step, by the time you get to turn two of this overlay, it's going to be easy. You're like the players are going to be getting everything together and whatnot. So it's really, really great. My gratitude is going to go out to Jim Johnson for, of course, asking me to be a part of this, and Ivan Sorensen, who really took the idea of this procedurally generated system, which we see on video games and things like that all the time, but really starting to see what that looks like at the table. And he started it with, with 5 parsecs and 5 leagues, and then taking that concept and applying it to what is essentially like a board game to supplement your role playing. And so like, I would not have been able to do this on my own. He did a lot of the heavy lifting, and I kind of molded it into the Star Trek lens. So I appreciate him. Anytime I emailed him any questions or observations from playtesting, he was quick to respond. So thank you, Ivan. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Al. And yeah, my gratitude goes out to Ivan and to Al for pulling this together and rising to the challenge. When I got it on my plate, I've mentioned it before, I had several huge projects on my plate. I knew I couldn't do them all alone. So I brought in Michael to help me with the captain's log, and I handed this over to Ivan and Al, especially Al, to be the lead writer on this. And you brought it home, man. And I'm so grateful for you and for everybody else that worked on it. And I'm really excited now because, like, as a project manager, I've told you all I have a short memory. So, I put this project to bed. I was off and running to the next big projects on our plates and my plate. And as I do that, like, I purge and then I go on to the next thing. So I'm fresh on the next thing. And I won't say I forgot about stuff, but I kind of got a little fuzzy on some of it. Right. And now I've doing these recordings and these sessions with you all, I've gotten to go back through it and refresh my memory. And I'm like, oh yeah, there's some meat in here, man. And like you were alluding to, Michael, there's just another way to tell stories with Star Trek Adventures on top of Captain's Log and on top of STA and on top of everything else we've been doing, that I almost worry that we're bringing out too much cool stuff for players and game masters, like Lower Decks, Captain's Log, Tactical Campaign, boom, 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 all in the space of a year,
Star Trek fans never complain. You got to remember, we were starved for so long. Let's take it all now. Now we're just, gorging ourselves. Yeah. And this is my challenge as we wrap up. I have one challenge that I hope happens at Gen Con this year, because I plan to be at Gen Con. I would love to see someone out there set up a table with the map and the ships. I will come out. I will play with you. I will help game master through this. But I, just like we see at Gen Con, all these big tactical maps, I dream of seeing this as a Gen Con tradition now, where you just get people and just play for a day on a war segment. I mean, I can't wait to see that.
That would be cool.
Yep. All right. Okay. Al, it's time to put your kids to bed. IDIC.
Live long and prosper. Be safe. Be well. We'll talk to you all next time.